and so much work, exclusively really in America.
Mm.
I figured it out. Somebody asked me, said, well, how much work have you done since you've been here? And I thought, well, let's see, I did 1,200 performances at the MGM of FX. I did about 800 performances of Blood Brothers.
Uh-huh.
And probably another 500 or 600. I said 2,500 performances before since I've been here. And I think 15 years it had been.
That's right, it had, yeah, 15 years.
So it's been remarkable.
But I've got to ask you this. I mean, do they react the same way as they did? They're all that much older now.
Yeah.
Does your presence turn them back into teenagers?
Well, yeah, it's a very electric environment because I think for a lot of people, it becomes an emotional attachment to a time with perhaps they were emotionally much freer,
yeah,
and looser and happier and perhaps all of those things in a time in a world that was a little different. And people have asked me, what's the difference between the shows? Because they have experienced and heard about how they go kind of screaming and carrying on. But the truth is that their voices have dropped about an octave. And they now throw, like, instead of love beads, they throw, you know, underwear and knickers and things.
Oh, excellent.
So it's a good job, you know. It's a tough job, but somebody had to do it.
Exactly. Well, talking about you personally, I suppose it was inevitable that you'd become a performer, given your parentage, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, I think probably. It was more likely that than a brain surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, your dad, Jack Cassidy, was a huge star in the United States, but not so well-known over here, of course, was he?
No. Very well-respected theatrical actor. I think he did 40 Broadway shows and won a Tony Emmy and, you know, was a consummate professional and taught me a lot about work ethic. Far better actor than he was as a father, I think, to my brothers and I.
Yeah, well, I must talk to you about that because Jack actually left your mother when you were only 4 years old, and that had a devastating effect on your entire life, really, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I think any time you're talking about children of a broken home, it has a dramatic effect upon you. But when it occurred in my life, I was 3 and a half when you left. So you, intellectually and emotionally, I don't think you can really digest it and understand it. And in order to empower ourselves, children, they have to find a way to justify it or to blame oneself for it. There must be something wrong with me.
I've heard a lot of people in that situation say that. Yeah.
Like, what's the matter? Why would my dad want to leave me? Until I was 10 and I had a chance to see the two of them together in a room, we had a dinner, the three of us, and I couldn't wait to get away from the dinner table. Because
so you'd realize that they'd done the right thing at that point?
Yes, but you know, having spent 6 and a half years of dreaming and wondering and wanting, as all children do, for mom and dad to get back together again, I realized at that point I could feel and see that it was not appropriate.
But your dad then married Shirley Jones, and you and she were to become very important to one another professionally, of course, weren't you?
Yeah, she is such a fantastic person. Was loving and generous. Stepmother to me. Later on, when I became an actor and became fairly successful in television and was doing leads and guest shots and, you know, all the dramatic shows and before we did the pilot. And she taught me a lot because I became very successful overnight, as she did when she was 18 doing Oklahoma and then Carousel and The Man and all those
and
great...
she was wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've just mentioned the program, which I'm sure everybody listening knows is The Partridge Family.
Yeah.
Why was The Partridge Family such a huge television success?
I think it made people forget about whatever their existence in life was, and it made you feel good. I think people related to the idea of that freewheeling in the late 60s, early 70s spirit of traveling around, and the music was extremely well done for what it was. You know, I think
the music was unbelievably successful, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Well, it was a huge success, and by the time you were 21, you were the highest paid entertainer in the world. How did you manage to keep your feet on the ground, or did you, in fact, keep your feet on the ground?
Well, I don't know how you can characterize keeping your feet on the ground. I was in a, you know, in the eye of a hurricane. I was never, I don't know whether this is proper, but the word prat comes to mind.
Yeah, that's a good British word.
Yes, I don't think I was ever that. I think I always accepted the fact that I was a very fortunate guy and people to be as successful and famous and to be loved and admired and all of those things that came and have come to me as a professional, as an actor, and as a performer, and also as a person, as a human being. People have cared about me and what I can't describe to you how or why I've had the effect that I've been able to have, but I'd like to think that I've been a light and somewhat of an inspiration to people, and to try and bring some joy and happiness into their lives and to give them some sense of hope. I've heard from kids who've come from broken homes and letters and from moms and dads, and some of the stories are really quite inspirational, I must say.
Well, somebody else who's been a light, I read somewhere that that you'd actually consulted John Lennon, who, of course, has been a light to a lot of people.
Yeah.
To ask him how to cope with the the whole idea of stardom.
Yeah, actually, it was how to cope with getting out of it.
Uh-huh.
He and I had experienced a lot of the same kind of adulation, although a decade earlier. The way he handled himself and dealt with it as an individual and as such an intelligent guy and someone who I admired, because I was 13, 14 when the Beatles broke.
Yeah.
He had a tremendous influence on all of us in changing the world. But he talked about demystification. He wanted to have a life again. And when you can't walk out the door, and when you can't, the hotels will no longer take you because of the mania, and, you know, you're thrust in the boots of cars wrapped up in towels and blankets.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard to imagine how it changes your life.
It's a side of stardom that that the general public don't realize, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's also a side of stardom that very few people ever achieve, that kind of adulation and fame. You know, when I played Madison Square Garden in New York, they actually turned over 5 limousines. People, I remember the first time I stayed at in London, there were 5,000 people at the airport, and by the end of the week, there were 10,000 people a night in front of the Dorchester Hotel. It stopped traffic on Park Lane.
And they,
you know, people have said to me, I remember that. No one's ever seen anything like that before.
Let's stop for a piece of music.
Mm.
New CD that you've got out at
Indeed.
The moment. I've asked you to choose a track for us, and you've chosen Daydreamer.
I remember April, the sun was in the sky, love was burning in your eyes. Me, 'cause I was living in a world of ecstasy. Well, now you're gone, I'm just a daydreamer, walking in the rain, chasing after rainbows I'll never find again. Life is much too beautiful. Over, and I found myself alone with only memories of you. I was so in love I couldn't see, 'cause I was living in a world of make-believe. But now you're gone, I'm just a daydreamer, walking in the rain, chasing after rainbows I'll never find. Just a daydreamer, walking in the rain, chasing after rainbows I'll never find again. Life is much too beautiful, living all alone. Oh, how much I need someone to call my very own. I'm just a daydreamer, walking in the rain,
was Daydreamer, sung for you by my guest this morning, David Cassidy.
Mm-hmm.
David, your mother, Evelyn Ward, would appear to have been a strong person. So what was your childhood like, those early days?
Well, you're absolutely right. She was, both she and my father, were a very strong character, but because of their profession, both of them were on the road in the theater and trying to earn a living and struggling, frankly. From the time my parents broke up, I was 3 and a half, I lived with my grandparents. And they gave me a lot of love and support. And I think musically, I come from, on both sides, my father was a great singer. My mom and my grandmother and all of my grandmother's siblings were all musicians, and my grandmother was a concert pianist and a wonderful singer. She sang opera. And,
really?
Yeah.
Really?
So I had it on both sides, and they were very religious and took me to church from the time I was 5 years old.
Was that was your grandparents, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I became the soloist in the choir, and I did all of that. Yeah, so I had a pretty strong sense of, you know, right and wrong.
Yeah, just a moral background.
Yeah, exactly.
And does religion play any part in your life now?
No, organized religion does not. I have a strong faith in God and always have. I think my son is, my wife's, she's Jewish, and uh-huh. and
part so that of, means your son's Jewish then.
My son is Jewish, correct, but he's also someone who, out of choice, had the opportunity to go to the synagogue, and then has also had a choice, and also wants to participate in the Christian faith. So he's gone to church. He does participate in both, because his mother's faith, he's chosen to be part of the Jewish faith, and it's good for him. It's a good education. And
how old is he, David?
He's 11.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it's an interesting one, because I was raised in a very WASPy, white Anglo-Saxon,
yeah,
Protestant environment, and my dad was Catholic, Roman Catholic. So I had it from all sides.
What a mixture that is, isn't it?
Yeah, I had it all. And frankly, I think for all of us, more now than ever, we must accept the fact that no matter what your choice is God, and whatever your faith is, for me at least, I don't care. There isn't a right way. It's whatever faith you choose. Buddhists, there are 500 million Buddhists. Can they all be wrong? No. You have to just allow people to worship in the way they want to worship.
If your son went very strongly down the road of Judaism, would you be...
supportive.
Well, or would you be tempted to convert?
No.
No.
No, not at all. Part of the beauty of living in America is I've understood the concept of the freedom of choice, and we are allowed to worship in whatever way we choose, and there is no right way. There is no wrong way. I think a lot of us feel a certain parental pressure that we have to follow in our parents' footsteps.
And right.
Both of my parents kind of rejected, I think, their parents, and it's funny because my dad was raised very strict, a Roman Catholic and, you know, Irish Catholic, and I don't think he felt comfortable with it. He supported my grandparents in taking me to church, however. I was in an Episcopal church, but he didn't mind the fact that I was not of the Catholic faith and wasn't going to Catholic schools, and most of my friends growing up around me were Catholic.
A lot of people get a tremendous amount of comfort from their religion, though, particularly at difficult times in their life. And we all know that you went through a difficult time in your life, and you struggled with alcohol dependency.
Actually, not even alcohol dependency, but it was just an advice to try and get numb, because my reality was very, very painful. I'd lost my dad, and lost my manager, had died. I'd gone through a very painful divorce, and I think anything that you can use to try and make the pain go away, particularly for people in my business and artists, I think it tends to become like, oh God, he's an alcohol abuser, he's this or that. I don't think I was it, but I was certainly in a very, very bad emotional and mental state, and very unhappy. And I think religion had nothing to do with my survival and the metamorphosis I made in my life.
Was it something that you had to work through yourself?
Most definitely, but it also, I think, an inner strength and certainly a faith in God has had a lot to do with everything that I've done in my life, and mostly the strength in my own self and character and belief and a self-love, which is what most religions, I think,
would preach. Yeah.
Would preach, yeah.
There's a film being made about your life story. Mm-hmm. Is the film David Cassidy, warts and all?
Yes, it is. Warts, spots and all.
Do we need, David, to know this about our pop idols? Isn't it better for the general public if they remain on a bit of a pedestal?
You mean lie to them?
Okay.
You want to tell the truth or not?
Well, that's what I'm asking you.
Yeah, I think it's important to be able to share. People ask me, well, how do you feel about drugs? And, I got to be honest with you, I don't condemn them. But I've never, ever seen one positive experience has come from anyone who does drugs. Mm. So the answer is, I just think it's, you know, you either stop or you die. Either yeah. don't do that, because
yeah.
there are a number of friends of mine and people that I have loved and admired and that are no longer here. Yeah, I think it's important to tell the truth. And I think if you've been a role model for people, as I have been, for me, it feels good to be able to go and share my own experience with people, the mistakes and falling down, and at least I've been able to get up, dust myself off, and, you know, I'm 30 years on and happier now than I've ever been.
We've had two careers, in actual fact, haven't you?
Three, probably, yeah. Yeah, I've had actually two careers.
I've got to ask you this, though. What was it like seeing yourself portrayed on film? Mm-hmm. You know, somebody else being you.
Yeah, well, it's a little freaky, especially because he was lip-syncing to my voice.
Ah.
Yeah, we went back into the original studio, the Partridge Family stuff.
Right.
And re-recorded the Partridge Family songs from that segment from the David Cassidy movie, and are actually now on the latest CD, Then and Now.
Right.
Yeah, I Think I Love You, and I Woke Up in Love This Morning, mm-hmm. and it's one of those nights, in the eyes of the world, looking through the eyes of love, you know.
I write the songs?
I write the songs. That one's there, too.
Great.
Yeah?
But hang on, I read a quote from you. You said, musically, I never became what I thought I could become.
Well, I think that's true. I don't know that I'm not better now than I ever could have been either. I think because...
Are you frustrated by that?
No, I was at a time, but no, I do exactly what I want to do now. And I've produced and created a television series and movie. I have a hit show that I've wrote, produced, directed it in Las Vegas called The Rat Pack Is Back.
Yeah.
You know, from Broadway to...
To everywhere.
To everywhere. And now, you know, with my latest, with the concert tour the last year, I've been sold out everywhere, and the CD's just gone platinum, so what the hell do I have to complain about?
Well, let's hear something else from that CD.
Yeah,
then,
from the then, at least in terms of my own personal recordings, but a song that was originally recorded by Johnny Ray, a song I absolutely love that's on the new CD called Cry. And please, when you hear it, don't. But,
well, Johnny Ray did when
Johnny
he was
Ray
singing
did
it.
When he sang it, exactly.
Okay, let's hear it now and have a weep.
If your sweetheart sends you a letter of goodbye, it's no secret you'll feel better. When waking from a bad dream, don't you sometimes think it's real? But it's only false emotion that you feel. If your heartaches keep on hanging around just a little too long, and your blues just keep getting bluer with each song, sunshine can be found behind a cloudy sky. So let your hair down, baby, go on
Thank you.
That was Cry from the new CD by my guest this morning, David Cassidy. David, we talked a little earlier about the part that musical theatre had played in your revival, the revival of your career. Joseph coming first, what drew you to that?
Well, going to Broadway for me was, it's where I began. I mean, many people don't realize this, but my very first professional job before I was ever in television, I graduated from high school and moved back to New York and was working in a mailroom in the textile industry and trying to, you know, get a job as an actor. And I probably went on 300 or 400 auditions before I got a job. And my very first show was a Broadway show. My very first professional
job. Well, that's not a bad start, is it?
No, it was a great one. And my father had done 40 Broadway shows. My mother did probably 25 of them. And for me, it really was going home. And Joseph became a huge success, and it helped to revitalize my career, and I found myself really wanting to go and perform live and work in the theater again as a result of it, and being in New York again, being back home where I was born and raised, and it changed my whole attitude about, I think, so many things, but particularly about the work commitment. It's also a very positive and uplifting show.
With religious connotations, of course.
Yes, of course, from the biblical story, but it's a comedy that, a musical comedy. And interestingly enough, I mean, this was 1983 that I did the Broadway show. I came back over here the following year and...
Was that to do time?
Yeah, no, that was actually when I wrote a song that called Last Kiss, which was a big hit here with Alan Tarney, and the Romance album, which was a gold album. And I did a tour here, played the Albert Hall a couple nights, and I then went and did Time in the West End.
So you took her actually from Cliff Richard, didn't you?
Yes, yeah. Indeed I did.
And Laurence Olivier was in that, wasn't he?
Well, his head was in it. yes, it was Laurence's head. It was an unbelievable production, really. I mean, I later did a show in Las Vegas that was inspired by the UK production of Time, called EFX in Las Vegas. I did it for 2.5 years. And
hugely successful, that.
Yeah, well, John Napier, I mean, is, you know, he's the best. He did all of the sets and the costumes, and the effects in the show were tremendous, but it lacked a certain, I think, plot.
Yeah, but I'm
very
sure
successful.
At that time, you were voted the best performer in Las Vegas. Mm. Now, that's a tremendous achievement considering the competition.
Yeah, it was a wonderful thing. Being Entertainer of the Year and Best Singer and Performer and all of the laurels that they've come. But, you know, again, the work ethic, I think, has a lot to do with it. But you have to have a belief in yourself.
Mm.
If you don't have that, you can... If you're fortunate enough to be successful for a minute and a half, let alone, you know, years, and then you walk away from it, the idea of coming back and having the kind of success that I've been able to have, it is very rare, and you have to be able to suck it up and go out there and give everything you got. And ultimately, it's always been about the work for me. I love the work, and it's never been about the fame or the money. And
but pop singers are of their generation, aren't they? And they have a natural life, don't they, as far as being a pop singer is concerned?
I think that's why I've been able to survive, is that I haven't just been a pop singer. You know, I've been an actor and somebody who is a writer and a producer and everything else now. So,
well, talking about the theatre, I've got to talk to you about Blood Brothers. I mean, Blood Brothers is set in Liverpool. You didn't change the location.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you got the voice.
Yeah.
Well, and you're working with Pet Clark. And, of course, your brother Sean was in it as well, wasn't
it? Yeah. It was a wonderful experience to do that. Really and truly, it changed my life forever. And I mean that sincerely, that... So many things happened around the time that we moved from Los Angeles to New York, and my wife and I had just had our only child, Beau's, and he was coming of age, and we just bonded together, and I think it was so wonderful to work with my brother and to do a show like that was so moving, and to be on the stage every night with my brother and Petula. You know, I truly love her, and she's one of the great talents that I have ever worked with.
Yeah, bless her. She is truly an international star, isn't she?
Yeah, not just a star. She's also a great talent. Fame is one thing, but having the goods, you know, people don't realize she's a terrific actress, too. And she's a very close friend of mine. I always will love her and care for her. And, you know, she and I have done something together that it was monumental. Bill Kenwright, who produced the show, said never happened in the history of Broadway where the show came over and was panned by the critics. And the audiences loved it until the reviews came out, and then they panned it. And 2 weeks after we went into the show, it became a gigantic hit and ran for a couple of years.
Which proves that the critics know nothing.
Well, it proves that they're not always right. And
they're not on the same wavelength as the public, are they?
Yeah, well, Willie Russell's a great playwright. There's no question about it, and it's a fantastic show. And when it's performed at the level that the talent was in the show, and it changed my life from the day I closed in the show, I flew out to Las Vegas and started reworking the show at the MGM.
Immediately.
The next day.
Well, you've never stopped working since you were 17. You constantly reinvent yourself to keep us interested.
Mm.
You must have enough money by now, so what motivates you to keep at it?
Oh, I'm filthy rich. Are you kidding?
Exactly.
Christ, what am I doing? It's not the money that's ever motivated me. It's what you do with your life. It's how you conduct yourself with your family and your friends and people and people that you interact with every day. It's who you are. What do you want out of your life? What quality do you want? You wake up, you're angry, you're negative, and you're hostile, you'll get it back in your life. If you wake up and you try and find light and goodness and try and give something to someone.
So what is your motivation then when you wake up in the morning? What are your first thoughts?
Well, sex is probably the first thing I think about.
That's excellent. That's because you're a bloke, so
yeah,
told,
yeah, exactly. And then I think after sex, I would go money. No, of course I'm kidding. I think the first thing I think about is my family, my wife and son.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having them. Are they all right? Are they around? And I think about my friends. And then the idea of when you get up and have something to get up for in your life that you enjoy doing, something you love to do. You know, I come from a very creative family, so we're musicians, actors, writers. You know, my brother is a very successful writer and producer in television now. He does a...
Is that Sean?
Yeah, he has a big television show that he wrote called The Agency, about the CIA.
Oh, right.
I'm sure it'll probably cross the pond in the next year or so.
Well, we're glad that you've crossed the pond, and we hope that it's not too long before you're back again, and of course we hope that when you do come back, you'll come and talk to us again on Good Morning Sunday.
I'd love to do that. Thanks.
David Cassidy, thanks for being with us this morning.
Have a great day.